flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
A lot of these small, smaller radio stations.
Very small. You know, like a small building.
You've never worked at a place like that?
Small building. No, I hadn't worked.
Yeah, so that's where
I'm from, the South Side.
My radio career started there.
Yeah. Oh, really? And one of those really?
One of those really small stations, yes. WKVI.
WKVI.
99.3 FM, Voices of Kankakee Valley.
The Cave?
It's never been called The Cave.
It's David in the Cave.
Was that in the cave?
Did you talk like a real radio guy?
I tried.
It's David in the Cave. We're going to play some rock and roll.
I don't know how I talk now, but I tried to talk more like a radio guy then. I was 16 years old.
That's hysterical.
And I was trying out my new radio voice.
How do you like my fake radio voice? Really wasn't listening.
And I was the weekend guy playing, you know, the hits.
Playing the hits.
You did it in the Cave?
In the Cave.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
WKVI.
That's kind of the way it sounds.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, boy. You know, who cares who wins and who loses? When the bet pays, the bet pays, Mr. David.
Morning, Molly. Yes, my bet on the under for the Blackhawks and the Hurricanes paid off. I was watching that game oblivious to what I bet, but it was 3-2, and the over-under, the number was 6.5. Based on the advice I got from Nick Costos, I took the under. And I'm sitting there watching the game thinking, all right, pull the goalie. All right, tie it up. Tie it up. Come on, Bedard, one more goal. Tie it up. And it occurred to me, actually didn't occur to me till this morning when we're discussing it before the show.
You're telling this story and we're, what?
And you guys are like, why would you want that to happen if you bet on the under, which is something I don't typically do, betting on hockey games.
Betting, period.
Betting, period.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that you were correct, but I am not conditioned to looking at these games like a gambler.
Oh, that's funny.
And now maybe I've been bitten by the bug.
Yeah, it feels that way.
I don't
last
know.
Couple
What's
days.
Next? What's next?
You're going, but, you know. Yeah, that's what's
Thank
next.
You. Thank you. Although I did win. I won.
Yeah.
I got the money that I squandered in the Bulls-Celtics game. Mm-hmm. I recovered most of it.
See, and you know, Kings. You lost the juice, right? So, I mean, you're 1-1, but you're down financially. See what I'm
saying? I am. I'm down a little bit. Yeah. I'm down a little financially there.
So that's gambling.
So right? What's next?
That's gambling. You really need to win to gamble.
We got until 10 o'clock to figure out my
next best bet. What are you going to do? What are you investing in?
Where are the Bulls
the
tonight? What are the Bulls doing tonight? They got the Hornets? Is that where they are tonight?
I would not be investing in the Bulls.
Yes. No, they Raptors. They're in Toronto. I'm sorry.
Yep, they play the Raptors tonight.
The Raptors. Yes. I saw Chuck Swirsky at the Birthday Rogers boy. Center. I saw him at the Blue Jays home plate yesterday taking a photo. So
I'm getting out the dancing shoes.
I should have known that. And there's a lot of opportunities there, Bulls and Raptors. I'll have to look at it closely. More closely later.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we do that now on the air?
One of our gambling guests could probably help me out.
Yeah, you can trust. I believe we have Mike Palm on okay, at 844.
Yeah. I'll be all over that.
Mike's a good man. Yeah. He'll be happy to help.
Yeah.
So the introduction of the new coordinators, and by that, it was really two new coordinators. And by that, it was really one guy who's been a head coach and a guy that was a first-time coordinator. Mm-hmm. So it was more one new coordinator, an experienced coordinator, and a returning coordinator.
Well, essentially, we met two new guys yesterday. Richard Hightower is the holdover. He got a chance to express his gratitude for coming back, essentially, and to remind people that he's here. And then Dennis Allen and Declan Doyle got a chance to make their first impressions on the Bears media, and by extension, Bears fans. And so both of those guys, I think, came across the way you would expect them to.
Yeah.
Dennis Allen was a guy who knows how to talk ball. He's a coaching lifer. He's going to talk like a defensive coordinator.
Yes, he is.
You could plug and play him in a lot of different cities, and he would have the same approach. He sounded a little bit like his approach to being a defensive coordinator, a lot like Matt Eberflus. A little more aggressive, maybe. A little more, you look at the metrics, maybe a little bit more of a man coverage approach. But very similar. Very similar. Declan Doyle, he's young. He's bright. He's highly organized, intense and intelligent. He's a guy that has been identified by guys in some of the best in the sport as an up-and-comer. So you respect that.
And still no movement on some of the coaching additions, right?
Yeah, still nothing yet.
To report yet.
Nothing to report yet. As Clay Harbor told us, there's some rumors down in Alabama. Big Z was down there, too. We're talking to him at 7 o'clock. We'll find out what the latest is.
Right.
There are some other movements afoot with the defensive line coach.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Johnson was reportedly added to the staff, the defensive line coach from the Birmingham Stallions?
Well, he's been other places. It wasn't just that's not his only stop in his career. But
no, it's not. But they poached him from the Birmingham Stallions staff,
yes,
correct?
That's correct.
What will they do for a defensive line coach?
Oh, I don't know. What next for Stallions?
I don't know. I mean,
I wouldn't.
I think that Bill Johnson's got a good reputation because he worked with Dennis Allen in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He has a Super Bowl ring from the Saints' Super Bowl title.
Mm-hmm.
Then he also went to LSU. Worked.
There's a lot of Sean Payton ties, aren't there?
There's a lot of Sean Payton ties in this entire staff.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'd rather have Sean Payton, but there are a lot of Sean Payton ties on this staff, yes. The Naperville product. I also think I thought you were going to say there's also a lot of Dan Campbell ties on this staff.
Well, Dan Campbell, by extension, Sean Payton guy, yeah.
But it's interesting that Ben Johnson comes from the Lions. The Lions were rejuvenated because of the Dan Campbell era, essentially. And the Bears' new staff, if they're going to be revitalized, it's going to be with a lot of assistant coaches and because of the connections to Dan Campbell.
I hate to ask this question, but I can't help it. Will there be a lot of confusion between Ben and Bill Johnson?
Yeah, I think so. I do think there could be.
Is it possible like Bill shows up and he accidentally moves into Ben's office and he's like, oh, this is fantastic. And then they're kind of like, no.
Because it had B. Johnson?
Yes.
I just wonder, when Ben Johnson goes to open up some boxes that are marked B. Johnson, is he going to open up and see a lot of Birmingham Stallions t-shirts and paraphernalia, memorabilia.
I think someone's going to have to explain to him that it's W. Johnson and B. Johnson, right?
That's going to be the way they have to go.
That's what they have to do, just to avoid the confusion.
Or if coaches wore jerseys or they had the names on the back of their shirts, if they could actually spell out their first names, they're short enough to do that.
If the NFL at this point started putting on jerseys like baseball coaches, managers get the uniform, Lasorda, what would that confusion
that would be really funny if actually football coaches had to dress out like baseball managers do, and there you all of a sudden see
with pads
out like kickers, and they have just a single bar with the helmet.
They pad out like kickers. Kickers don't need their pads.
They're not
allowed to make a tackle.
They don't need their pads. They're allowed to make a tackle. They are encouraged or want to make a tackle. The kickers typically, there's some exceptions to the rule. Some guys like to mix it up.
When Bill Johnson gets here, you can ask him what it was like kind of helping to develop Akeem Hicks.
I could do that.
And you could say, hey, has Akeem mentioned me at all?
I could do that because I know that was a big moment in Akeem's career. Him intersecting with me, just as me intersecting with him was the highlight of my tenure at the score, actually. Huh. Those are mornings I look forward to as much as any mornings. Those Mondays. Those were special.
What did you write about him that he didn't like you?
He didn't like, at one point, I had come to his locker, and it was just me and him, and I asked him a question about scheme fit, or I forget what it was, but he did not like it. And I wrote it anyway, and he remembered it. As you know, a lot of professional athletes have long memories.
Yes.
And he never forgot that.
It's super weird when you accidentally offend somebody. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, like
you write something.
Yes, I do know what you mean.
You write almost like a throwaway sentence at the bottom of a column, and you really upset someone.
Yeah.
Or for me, I was doing grades one year. And I can't remember who it was, but I gave a guy like a C, mm-hmm. which I think is satisfactory, if I'm not mistaken. And he went ballistic and wanted to know why I graded him so low. And I was kind of like, well.
Who was this now?
This was Jay Lewenberg.
Okay. You never forget.
No, I mean, he confronted me about it. And I was like, well, what grade did you want? And he started making his argument about how well he had played and how his year had gone. And I was kind of nodding. And he's like, he said at one point, he said something to the effect of at least a C plus. You know, he wanted a B plus. I don't think he was trying to sell me on an A.
No, but it bothered him. It rankles
but
him.
But I was kind of like, I had to do like 50-something of those.
A lot of those guys don't care. And a lot of those guys are oversensitive. Yeah, like a lot of us are.
A lot of guys.
Us, them, a lot of people.
A lot of guys fight for their spot in the league, and they feel that damages it when, you know.
Or maybe you have a guy like an Adam Eaton. Remember Adam Eaton?
Yeah.
Overachieving Adam Eaton. And maybe an Adam Eaton, even though you might have written a story about how far he has come in his career to be in the White Sox outfield, one day doesn't appreciate the fact that you referred to him as a fourth outfielder.
Oh, boy.
And maybe Adam Eaton one day would want to cross the clubhouse to get in your face and to yell at you in front of his assembled teammates as a show of strength. And maybe that just is an example of what you're talking about. Loved him. No, not really.
Oh, gosh.
Eaton, nobody like you.
Ozzy was right. In Ozzy we trust.
Wasn't he kind of a speed talker? Didn't he kind of have a lot of...
I mean, he talked fast?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. He talked fast. Well, I'm just trying to think of when you have these examples, you reference, you do your mental... just your memories, you think of each team in town. Has there been one or two examples that stand out? There are a couple. Yeah. There are a couple like the Adam Eaton. And we always have fun with Owen Kreutz because he never forgets anything. And those are some memories.
Olin didn't like you.
I almost said fond memories, but those are some memories.
Yeah, I don't know that Olin really liked anybody, but I think he enjoyed kind of the exchange.
He particularly enjoyed not liking me.
Okay.
I think that was good. But
I was up at Hell's Hall and I'm walking by the training room. There's a knock on the window and I turn around and there's a guy flipping me off. And I just couldn't stop laughing for a while. It was just very funny. So, but I had a better relationship with him than you did. Mm-hmm. But I always thought that was one of the funniest. Like, someone gets your attention just to kind of give you the business.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the can be the fun of it. It's I'm looking at the list of places where Bill Johnson, the Bears' new defensive line coach. He has coached at Northwestern State, McNeese State, Miami of Florida, Louisiana Tech, Arkansas A&M, Arkansas, Atlanta Falcons, Broncos, Saints, Rams, LSU, Birmingham Stallions, Houston Roughnecks, Birmingham Stallions. That's a long
He's worked list a lot. He's got some age on him if you care about that.
69 years old.
Yeah, he's an experienced coach.
Yes, he is. So he's joining the staff. That would be the most experienced coach on their staff.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Who else do they have then if they have Bill Johnson? They have to have an offensive line coach. Bill Dre is the tight ends coach.
Is he going to stay?
I think he's probably
Biggsy suggested that
he would more likely to. Jim Dre. And then I think they might be set. They're getting close to getting a full contingent. Full compliment. But I enjoyed those Zoom sessions yesterday. I like the, I think that we can talk during the pick six of impressions of Declan Doyle. It must be somewhat difficult to go into a situation where your job description is somewhat vague.
Yeah.
And you know that there are a lot of people that are wondering, why are you here?
Well, you're offensive coordinator not calling plays.
Mm-hmm.
But contributing to that. He kind of explained what he was, and I don't know, was he told this is what his job is? But he kind of explained
it. He did explain it, but I think that if there's anything that
it was
you
fair.
Felt for him yesterday, that he had a lot of expectations, because when you are a 28-year-old offensive coordinator, the youngest in the league at your job, then there's a certain level of expectation or pressure you might feel to sound like you deserve the job. And I thought he did well.
Yeah.
I thought he did well his first time out.
What'd you think of the experienced former head coach?
Dennis Allen?
Did you notice a difference?
Yeah, I did, because he's a little bit more he's more likely to give you the, I'm the defensive coordinator elevator talk. You know, you get an elevator with Dennis Allen, by the time you get to down to the floor level, you know what he runs and his approach and his aggressiveness and all the things.
Yeah.
Because he's done it so often. He's been a head coach twice before in two different markets. He's been a defensive coordinator. So he has more experience in the spiel, if you will.
He's been in front of the camera. Now, I don't know if he's been on Zoom as much as the younger guy. The young guys seem to.
That's true.
Seem to
so that way he's
more familiar with Zoom.
Had the bad angle.
During COVID, they probably had classes.
You think he's that young?
I'm joking.
He might have been.
He's pretty young.
He's not that far removed from college.
Yeah.
5 years ago, he would have been probably 23 years old. Although it sounds like when he was 22, he told the story of driving down to New Orleans. He only had making $7,000 a year when he was at Iowa, and talking his way into a support staff level job with Sean Payton.
That's pretty good. That's really good. Who are we kidding?
Good initiative.
And then Richard Hightower.
Yeah, I think his biggest thing yesterday was kind of resetting where things are. A lot of people wondered why he's still here, and I think that's a fair question. Biggsy made it sound like it was more of a sure thing than I ever thought that it would be.
Right.
If that makes sense. And I want to be respectful of his experience and what he brings, but this was a pretty significant season for very impactful special teams errors.
Well, they couldn't win a close game. And I'm not going to compare the Bears to the Chiefs. But one of the differences in the Bears and Chiefs seasons, one of them, is that the Chiefs were the first NFL team to win a game with a last-second field goal three times, three different kickers. Three different kickers. So that is like, wow. You know, Dave Tobe really knows how to run special teams.
That is the impression you're left with. And then didn't they win a game by blocking a kick too?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, to win three games on a last-second either extra point or field goal from a different person who kicked the one before is pretty extraordinary. And the Bears didn't do that. And it's not
– Well, it's not so much not the Bears didn't just do that. It was that
the Bears didn't do much. They had blocks so many games.
Oh,
they,
on field goals.
They lost a game.
In the same way.
Yes.
Through the same
gap. Well, and then the next week they had the same problem. Yes.
Which to me is like, well, that's a coaching mishap. But, so it's in that context that you – when Richard Hightower was retained, no disrespect to him.
But you were curious.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
I was surprised. So he did make his case yesterday. So he's back. The three coordinators in place. And the Senior Bowl will be tomorrow. And everyone's kind
of
gone.
Will you watch much of the Senior Bowl? I don't really watch much of the Senior Bowl.
No, I don't think so.
I think the best stuff is already over with Senior Bowl.
Yeah. Everyone's got their list of guys that made impressions, and every executive down there probably has their list of guys who made impressions.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The game certainly can give you one last shot to make an impression if you're a player, a guy like Leonard.
Yep.
But I don't find myself looking forward to either watching it or betting on it.
Oh, boy. Look at you. If you start betting on the Senior Bowl,
then I got problems.
Then we're going to have an intervention.
I don't think I'll be betting on the Senior Bowl, but what team does Riley Leonard play on?
Really? You're going to?
No, I'm not.
You're that big a supporter, or
no,
are you going the other way?
Yeah, I might be going the other way. I don't. I'm surprised that he is a draft prospect.
I don't know that he is. He is a senior, and the Senior Bowl, you know, the guy played in the national championship.
Yeah.
I wonder about that, frankly. I see him as, you know, a kind of a the greatest skill would be the kind of push tush kind of skill, right? He's a short yardage quarterback. If there was ever a need for that kind of player,
the term "damning with faint praise" has never been used better.
That's echoing right now. Yeah,
it's never been more applicable.
But I you know, we'll see. I would suspect that he would go through the draft without getting drafted. That's just my – this is me as a scout looking at a player. That doesn't mean
he's not a polished passer.
Yeah.
He's not a polished downfield passer yet.
And he's not a good enough runner to overcome – to be a guy that's not a polished passer.
I don't know this off the top of my head, but did Sam Hartman – he signed as a free agent. He was undrafted as well. Mm-hmm. The last Notre Dame quarterback that was a transfer, right? He was with the Washington Commanders still, and he was not drafted, undrafted. Okay.
I think he had better hair.
He did have better hair. There's no doubt about that.
Dissing
team,
Notre Dame quarterback. They had a guy named Joe Montana who once outplayed his draft status.
Third round draft pick should
That's
have been
right.
the Bears. Yeah. Bears passed on him.
I know. The league did.
The legend never ends. Yeah, that was quite a story. There haven't been many other Notre Dame quarterbacks that have been in a position to be guys who go high in the draft.
Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, he was
through town.
He was a second rounder of Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
Brady Quinn was a high pick. Point.
Brady Quinn was another
that was over. He was overdrafted.
Whose brother-in-law is a better player?
Who's his brother-in-law again? AJ Hawk.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that now. Some of these trivia things come to. Hey, by the way, speaking of that era of Notre Dame football player, Tommy Zbikowski. See, he's head high school football coach. He's in. I think it was. Let me find this out. But he's going to be the head football coach in
St. Pat's.
At St. Pat's.
Wow, that's great.
Great for Tommy Z. We should get him on. What? Tommy Z's got a lot to say.
If Mully ever takes another day off, we'll book Tom Zivakovsky.
Okay.
Oh, will you stop? I have no problem with Tom Zivakovsky.
Tom Zivakovsky's a
local guy made local good. Guy made Those good. Are my favorite words.
Great story.
Talking about guy. I was just surprised.
Yeah, well, I think he's got a lot to say.
We should have him on. I was like, what?
Yeah, we should have him
week
on.
Week after the Super Bowl? What do you say?
Why not? I think
okay, let's go. I think why not?
I like the fact he wants to get back. At one point in time, he wanted to be. I think this was one story, maybe at almost five more years ago. He wanted to get into coaching because he wanted to be the coach at Notre Dame one day.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think that could be difficult, but he's going to be coaching high school now, and good for him.
He and Jeff Samardzija were roommates, right, at Notre Dame, or.
They were part of that crew, Charlie Weiss's crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was back in.
Jeff Samardzija opted to play baseball, made a lot more money.
I think Jeff Samardzija made a good decision, the right decision. When you look at his career earnings as an MLB player.
Yeah.
I always thought that he still could have played in the NFL. I thought he could have been a pretty good receiver. Yeah. But his longevity would have been limited.
Right.
It would have been probably a, 3 to 5 year, 5 to 7 year receiver. In MLB,
Did Tom Zivakovsky become a fireman or something?
Yeah.
That was a very famous story.
He was a boxer.
He was a
fireman, coaching.
Yeah, we talked to him. He came in the studio and we talked to him when he was in the boxing era.
Yeah, he's done that. I remember doing a lot of stuff with Tommy Z. He was the first guest of my – this is going back when he was in South Bend and I was in South Bend. So that was a long time ago.
This was your – when you were doing the – the radio was a 16-year-old? He was your first kid?
No. This was in South Bend. The last year before I left South Bend, I had a TV show, and he was my first guest on the TV show.
What was it called?
My TV show?
Yeah.
Sports Dogs with David Haw.
Sports Dogs?
With a Z.
Oh, wow. With
Who
a
knew
Z?
David was doing a betting show all the way back then?
Who knew David was...
Vegas Haw.
David was willingly misspelling a word.
It was on WSBT TV. They had a meeting that we were doing it Sunday nights is after the local broadcast. I left the meeting. I came back and they said, we got a name for your show. And that was it. Sports Dogs with a Z. They had a logo and the whole thing.
Did your enthusiasm wane?
It kind of did.
Yeah, when you found out
the name. It kind of did. I loved doing that show, but I didn't like...
Was there no pushback on that?
You know, Mully, I didn't push back a lot.
Okay.
I didn't push back a lot. Happy to do it.
That doesn't seem like something... I don't think of Dogs with a Z and say, David.
I don't think I do either, but... We're going after the younger demo. So at that time, I was a little bit younger in the demo.
Oh, that's beautiful. All right. Well, we got to get to the pick six. Please, more stories like that. That's hysterical. Sports Dogs. It's Mully and Haw. It's Mully and the Sports Dogs. David doesn't even get a... He gets a plural for some reason. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy 5 and get 5 free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did you like hearing what new Bears DC Dennis Allen said about what to expect from the Bears defense in 2025?
We want to take the fight to the offense and not let the offense dictate the tempo to us. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to challenge everything. We're going to play the game the right way. We're going to play it tough, physical, you know, brand of football.
You like that?
Those are the right words, no question about it. That's what you want to hear, and that's what kind of you expect, right? You expect him to be dictating to the offense instead of the other way around, and you would expect them to be aggressive. It's an aggressive scheme, and by that I just mean that the people he's worked for and the way they've played that defense before has been pretty good. So I feel like when he comes in, you know, I remember having a conversation once with Dick Duran where he was saying things like, you know, we want the opponent to see it on tape. We want them to know all week what they're in for come Sunday. And like, I was like, God, like, if you could, you know, change your tone of voice, this would fire people up. Like, it was really, you know, it was like good football stuff. But it was just, you know, kind of, you know, Dick was a very
sleepy.
Not sleepy, but he was a very intelligent, you know, kind of.
It was like he was giving a math lecture,
yes,
rather than a football coach.
That's what I mean.
Speech.
So it's the right stuff, and I think if you read it, you'd be fired up. But the delivery of it wasn't kind of as football coachy as you'd expect. But that's kind of how people are. You know, it just depends on your personality, the way you deliver your message. But I, you know, he said all the right things. I think the guy he knows what he's doing. He's forgotten more football than a lot of people know. And it was interesting. The best part of it, I thought, was, you know, talking about his relationship with the new Bears head coach, Ben Johnson, and how it really comes through two other guys. You know, it comes through Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn, and how he coached with those guys and he played with those guys, and so he relied on them to give him intel on Ben, and Ben relied on them to give him intel on Dennis Allen. I think, and they decided that it would be a good match. I think it will be a good match.
Thank you. Aggressive. Be aggressive. Ooh.
Who doesn't like aggressive football, right? I mean,
look at
you know it's a Friday, right?
Where did you get
that? You know
it's
a Friday. Well, so as soon as we played the clip that was accompanied the question, Brandon and I both went into be aggressive, B-E-A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E, and then we're like, wait a minute, Haw did that.
You're welcome.
So we had Haw on that. Listen, I liked everything Dennis Allen had to say. You want your group to be aggressive. You want them to be in your face. Also talked about, listen, you know, this league is all about the quarterback, and my job is to stop the quarterback. So let's stop the opposing quarterbacks, and good things can happen.
I think stylistically they'll be similar to what we've seen under Matt Eberflus. They may blitz a little bit more, or they may play a little more man, which is kind of the same thing, because they'll trust the secondary, which he identified as the strength of this group. Mm. I don't disagree with that. They need help up front, obviously. Getting Andrew Billings back will make this defense better, will make Dennis Allen sound and look smarter. So there's some other things that need to happen, but this is very much a nod to continuity. This Bears defense is not changing schemes. It's not going to really be changing approaches. The personnel will be very similar. It's just up to Dennis Allen to get them to play better than they did in the second half of the season when they had some injuries and they didn't stop the run. They need to get to the quarterback. A lot of good things you heard from a guy that is a football lifer and has been there before. The most interesting thing I heard from Dennis Allen, though, was not related to scheme or personnel. It was related to how he got here and his alignment with Ben Johnson,
right,
who he said reached out to him near the end of the season before all of these things were moving wheels in motion or set in motion. And they thought, well, you know, let's collaborate. Would you like to come wherever I go? And this is the way the sausage is made.
Yes.
I don't know if it came from Rick Smith or not, but he'll have another podcast and we can learn that. But I do think that learning that this was an alliance that was formed during the season is very interesting, and that tells you how much Ben Johnson trusts Dan Campbell, because these two guys have never worked before together. I'm not even sure they had met before this.
No, they hadn't met. And what's interesting, though, and we talked about it, if you're a offensive coach going into an interview, what is the question that you're asked? Who's your defense coordinator? You got to have that arranged before you go in.
It sounds like he did.
And he did, for sure.
Oh, boy, that's a tough question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. What was the overall impression left by Bears new OC Declan Doyle?
Basically, I have to do that work that he's not going to have time to do, and he's going to have to be able to trust me that I'm going to be able to give him the correct information that he needs as a decision maker.
Your reaction and impressions based on what you heard from Declan Doyle there and other things you heard from him yesterday afternoon.
I'm really pulling for him. I find myself wanting him to sound like he knows what he's doing. I found myself yesterday hoping that he would go in this direction. I found myself hoping that a 28-year-old offensive coordinator, the youngest in the league, would say things that make us understand why he has that designation and why Sean Payton and now Ben Johnson have seen him as a guy that they want on his staff. Because I do think that when you are this coaching prodigy or this young whiz kid or however we're going to describe him, son of a coach as well, you're going to have things said about you that aren't always fair or accurate. So I found myself hoping that he made a good, strong first impression. And I found him to be highly prepared, intense and intelligent, maybe a little green, but that's what you get when you get a guy that's not even celebrated his 30th birthday yet. So his job description will be vague. I don't know what his role will be, but he's only been here 5 minutes. So I think those kinds of things will define themselves. Everybody will get into more of a work pattern and protocol and ritual and all those things. And once he developed those working habits, I think that people will start to see his value to the staff. It'll be harder for us to see on the outside, but I think he'll prove himself like he has in New Orleans when he was, you know, even younger, and in Denver under Sean Payton.
It is vague, David. I agree with you 100%. You just brought up Sean Payton. That's where I was going to go. I mean, that's a good person to learn from, and they did some good things with Bo Nix this past year, another part of that rookie quarterback class. So if he was able to soak up, be a sponge, if you will, working with that group out in Denver, that would be good. I wonder, too, like, will he have much interaction with QB1? I mean, it sounds like the passing game coordinator is going to be kind of helping Declan get everything together for Ben to put into place. I almost wonder if these guys are like, you know, glorified offensive graduate assistants at a college, breaking down tape, game planning, showing trends. Will it be Ben Johnson and the quarterback coach, the two voices in the ear and in the face of Caleb Williams? So he's got an important job, and at the end of the day, all the finger-pointing or all the applause are going to go to Ben Johnson as the head coach and offensive play caller, but he has a big job, and you got to be able to trust that person to help you out a ton.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of like you, David. I kind of find myself cheering for the guy to do well. It's weird. Like, I that tells you how much older you are than the guy, but, you know, it's a young guy with a big moment, and you know, I thought he explained that's accurate. That he's got to do a lot of the busy work that that the coach won't have time for, and he's got to be able to supply him with stuff that he can trust. And he also has to be able to communicate that to the players before they get to that moment with the coach, right? So it's an important role. It's a really big role. You're going to be involved. He was saying that he needs to know the mind of the play caller, and the way to do that is to watch tape with him, which is exactly what the play caller said about the relationship with the quarterback. So I guess the three of them will be doing that. I don't know if you have enough time to watch the same game tape with two different guys so they can get your mentality. But I really think he understands what his role is, and it's a fairly specific one, which is, you know, be the bright young mind that is connecting the information to the coach, the information to the players, and then kind of serving as a go-between there.
You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
Now we're looking for answers. Do the Bulls being shut out of the NBA All-Star game for the second straight year make perfect sense? Or is it inherently unfair? Do the Bulls have a worthy candidate?
See, the problem with determining that is that then you're going to have to eliminate someone else in order to make room for one of the Bulls players. So, do the Bulls have a candidate? Yeah. And, I mean, it's inherently unfair in terms of when your team is not relevant, you're not going to make many All-Star games. You got to be a really spectacular player. When your team doesn't win, just as if the team wins, you are the representative of that success and you are the All-Star on the group, right, if you have a good year. The same thing works the other way. If your team isn't very good, it doesn't matter how well you're playing if you don't win regularly. So I think Zach, out of all of them, Zach's their best player. And you'd like to see him get back to All-Star status. He made a couple All-Star teams. But I don't think he's a guy that you just say, oh, yeah, All-Star player. So it makes sense that he didn't make it. And who are you taking off the team to put him on? Did he get done badly? Well, I thought he was better than, if they had a baseball-like situation where every team had to have a guy, that'd be your guy. But it's just, I don't think anybody's going to be complaining about it, maybe his agent.
Well, I'm expecting someone to complain about it during this pick six, but we'll wait until I'm done. I won't be complaining about it. He's not with the team for three games right now, so don't go and be at the All-Star game out in San Francisco either. That's okay. Now, he's got stats very similar to two starters in this year's All-Star game. Two starters, but it's not all about stats. Okay, if you want somebody to pack a stat, get Max LaVine. Okay, he can pack a stat sheet. But again, what he doesn't do, he doesn't win. He doesn't lead a team to wins. And this is winners go to the All-Star game. Winners get the five-star private jet treatment to go out to the All-Star game. Zach does not belong.
See, the disrespect train is never late with Dustin Rhodes. I understand what you're saying, but that's really unfair. This is not because he's not a winning player or any of that other nonsense that you'll hear in reference to Zach not being on this All-Star team. You look at the guys who were chosen. Mully's exactly right. You could look at this as a snub, but that would not be really productive because other more deserving players on other winning teams.
David, you just said it on other winning teams. The loser? Where's the losing team?
Because
All-Star?
There's nuance here. I'll look it up at the break. There's nuance here, because what happens is that you have reasons why the Bulls are where they are. It's not all Zach LaVine.
No,
it's not all that Zach LaVine. I'm not putting this at the Bulls are running in place and below the level of mediocrity because Zach LaVine is not a winning player. No, he is an All-Star caliber player and the Bulls can't figure out a way to become a top four team in the East. Both things are true. Zach LaVine is an All-Star caliber player. He didn't earn his way onto this team because others were more deserving, having better seasons on their respective playoff caliber teams. Look at the list. And then you got other guys like Cade Cunningham, but this is his breakout time.
Yeah.
It's like, welcome to the NBA. This is what we expected.
And a good team.
You have Tyler Herro as a guy on the Heat. Yeah, you know what? He's got a special skill, a superpower. That's great. He's a great shooter. So I don't want to just this. I think, I'm sorry, Dustin, not picking on you again, but I think overall, people look at this, it's lazy to say Zach LaVine is not on the All-Star team because he's not a winning player.
Wow, now I'm lazy. Okay.
You're never lazy, but it's a lazy idea to link those two things together. It's more than that.
Oh, my God, what a question. What a question.
Ah, you know who's not lazy? That's Joe Fortenbaugh. He is everywhere, including here with you guys at 7:40 this morning. What did you make of John Morosi telling Matt Spiegel, Lawrence Holmes, our dynamic duo in the afternoon, that the Cubs are interested in Padres Dylan Cease?
Getting Dylan Cease with even 1 year left on his deal would be a big market move by a big market team.
Well, what would the Cubs have to give up for Cease? Would it be a bigger haul than what the White Sox received for him?
I loved this idea. I love this idea now. And I don't know that it's realistic. But would Owen Casey, Kevin Alcantara, and Jordan Wicks do it for you?
three prospects for Dylan Cease, a rental, maybe? Or would Dylan Cease come to Chicago and realize, well, after one good year, this is 2025, this is the go-for-it year for the Cubs, and say, well, after a Cy Young-worthy season, maybe I'll stay. I don't know. But you don't know until you try. The Cubs have a lot of prospect capital. I would try to invest it in a guy like Dylan Cease, even if there's some risk involved. Been down this road with Kyle Tucker. King Tuck is now in a Cub uniform. Dylan Cease could have the same idea, the same approach, and he's a guy that would be the top of your rotation. Go for it, Jed.
David, I'm with you. Go for it. But no, Owen Casey's a hard no, because if Justin Tucker's not here next year, then Owen Casey is going to be where Justin Tucker is, and that's in right field. So I think you're right. I'm right with you. I'm going to take Owen Casey out, and I'm going to put Javier Assad in. So I could go Javier Assad, Jordan Wicks, and Alcantara if that's what it takes. If it takes three, now I'm giving you two pitchers that I think can eat a lot of innings, can be threes and fours in this league. So I think it's a little unfair. But when you want Dylan Cease, you have to pay a little bit extra. This would be extra. I think it should be two for one, but I'm not down with Ben Brown or Owen Casey being one of the two to get Dylan Cease.
How about Cease. Kate Horton?
You could talk me into Kate Horton, maybe. Because we don't know anything about Kate Horton. To that point, we don't really know anything about Owen Casey either, but I just think Owen Casey is definitely a guy who's going to play corner outfielder for the Cubs sooner than later.
Yeah, I think that, excuse me, I think that haul would be better than what the White Sox got, frankly. And I think it's probably going to be, I don't think the Sox did very well on that trade. Now, we'll see. We'll see how these players turn out. But I think the Cubs have a lot, and they have some redundant pieces. So if you're talking about what outfielder is going to be the star of that group, you better know now, and you better know that that's not the guy you're giving away, but you're going to give away a really good one, basically, in a deal like that. You know, I wonder if John Morosi is feeding his audience something here. I don't doubt the Cubs are interested in it. I don't doubt that the Cubs have enough to get it done. I do doubt whether the Cubs would actually get it done, because we've gone through an offseason where they're not quite spending what it takes to be better at everything, right? They kind of seem to be budgeting a little bit here. This would be a good investment, but I worry that we're kind of wishcasting a little bit. That anybody who's available, what about the Cubs? The Cubs, they're a big money team with big market.
We're merely responding to the speculation.
But we got to be responding to what they haven't done yet, which is they had this money, they cleared it up. You've been mad that they cleared up the money, but we've been trying to say, let's just wait and see what they do with it. If they get someone like Dylan Cease, okay. Way to go.
On board.
But
all aboard.
I just wonder if they're really going to do that. Are they going to do it? Then I'm all for it. Just don't want to get... I've been hurt before.
I've answered this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
What did you think of the Blackhawks and the Hurricanes game last night? Taylor Hall was there but did not start and did not play because he was sick. Do you think there was bad blood for Hall? Is that why he didn't skate? And what was your reaction to the 3-2 loss?
Well, obviously, I was only worried about Mr. David and his wager, and it was fairly quickly into the game. I was kind of like, yeah, okay, well, I guess I'm hoping the Hawks lose. It's kind of a drag to watch a game where your team is down 3-1, and you know if they score a couple goals, you're going to lose your wager. And I was kind of cheering for you. And I felt like you had like a good bet going with the over. And then I threw a wrench in it by asking Nick about it. And then you went the other way. And I felt like, oh, now
you were on the hook.
I felt like I was on the hook.
You were on the hook.
I also felt like I just couldn't. I didn't want to see them win that game. They're losing all the games. Why would they come back now? So it ruined the game for me.
I'm sorry.
Your wager on the game ruined.
I'm ruining lives.
I think you're not taking into account what anxiety those around you feel. Dustin was also sweating that one out. The two of us came in like, oh, God, we were totally sweating that out. And you were like, oh, no, everything was great. You know, they could have scored another goal. It didn't matter. You know, they just go to overtime. That counts.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's very funny. You know, Mully, you said it kind of ruined the game for you. It actually made the game for me because I was, like, super interested. So after the first, it's 1-1. The Hurricanes score two in the second, so it's 3-1. I'm thinking, eh. Then Bedard scores, and it was a really fun, great goal. So good for him for lighting the lamp in back-to-back games. And then they held on. I thought, good for David. And then this morning, David just didn't get it. Like, if they got to overtime, he would have lost that bet because there would have been seven goals. So Vegas, huh?
I got caught up in wanting to see Bedard score again, and then I didn't realize the ramifications until it was reinforced this morning. Yeah. I said I'm a gambler. I didn't say I was a good gambler. So I was more disappointed Taylor Hall didn't play. Didn't really appreciate what he had to say. I think it was in the Sun-Times this morning about his final days in Chicago. And I understand that he was a healthy scratch and this and that, and he was demoted. But I think that this is a guy I thought when they brought here, it was brought here, was because of his experience being the number one overall pick, the mentor to Bedard. And now he's kind of like, it never was really that great. He was demoted, this and that. So I was somewhat disappointed.
David, if you don't know what this is Kenny Rogers, the gambler. So this is dedicated to you.
Okay.
The gambler. Okay.
I was like wondering what the music was.
The music suddenly changed. There it is. Yeah. You got to know when to hold them. You got to know when to fold them.
Ask me the hard-hitting questions.
That's beautiful. Are you at all disappointed that Caitlin Clark declined an invitation to compete in the three-point competition at the NBA All-Star Weekend?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I'm a little bit disappointed. I thought that was going to be cool. I respect her reasons. I'm not quite sure what her stated reason overall is. Does she want to just stay out of the way? Does she want to not create a...
She was going to save it for the WNBA.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. I get that. But last year went quite well.
Yeah.
And I was looking forward to that again with her now in the competition. But I hope it doesn't create a wave of criticism. I don't think that she needs to be dealing with that.
Everything she does.
It seems to.
Isn't it?
She's much more polarizing than I ever would have expected. But, yeah, I am a little disappointed, even though I do understand.
Yeah, I got mixed emotions on it. I understand where she's coming from. She wants her first All-Star game experience to be in the WNBA's All-Star game, which this year is going to be in Indianapolis, the home of her team.
Yeah.
So I get that. It would have been a fun event. It would have been a fun event. It would have been, to me anyway, must-see TV on NBA All-Star Saturday night. Hey, there's a Bull participating in NBA All-Star Saturday night. Okay, so shout out to Matas Buzelis, the lone representative of the Bulls in the All-Star game.
Winning player?
Well, let's see. Again, let's go. During the break, I'm going to research all the losers playing in the All-Star game.
Wow. I think that her reason seemed respectable to me. Like, she wants her first experience with that to be in the WNBA in her home city where she's playing now, and that made a lot of sense. I don't know why there was any pushback toward her, and it was all this like kind of petty jealousy that she gets so many people following her, and the league has been together and do it. It's almost like she's doing things now to make sure she doesn't get more attention. She just wants to be a basketball player, and it will all come, and it will all, you know, she's that good a player that she will get tons of attention, and she's that good a player that I think that as she matures in the league, she will become the biggest voice in it, and she will be there. Star of stars as her career continues, but there's still the whole cabal of the, let me rephrase, the Connecticut cabal that doesn't want a player from Iowa to be the centerpiece. And then there's other people that just think she's getting too much attention. It's like the – it's all the it's similar to what we're seeing with the Chiefs, where, you know, because the Swifties want to follow the Chiefs, and because, you know, if you go to a Eras Tour concert, you know, a quarter of the crowd is dressed in Chiefs jerseys – that creates this backlash against the Chiefs.
It is extraordinary, and I don't know if that's overstating it, but Taylor Swift has made the Chiefs more polarizing.
Which is really weird.
Very strange.
Really weird. And it's
and unfair.
I mean, why? Let's not get into it.
We won't get into it now.
Well, we should eventually get into it, but I do think you are absolutely right. And I think that there's the same sort of kind of popularity pushback going on with Caitlin Clark.
Good comp.
All right, we got the extra point next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
B-E-A-G-G-R-E-S-S-I-V-E-B. Aggressive.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
With the NBA trade deadline fast approaching, do you believe the Bulls will make a move or two or three by Thursday? Who's the player most likely to be moved? And can you give a over-under on how many deals they will make?
That's a good little end of the question there, because it kind of entices us to think in terms of over-under gambling terms. So you're reeling me back in.
Man, now this show has changed.
So I think that the Bulls are going to make a move, because I can't imagine the reality if they don't. I can't imagine having this much buildup toward this trade deadline without them doing something that indicates they want real change to occur. If you don't do anything, you are, I think, in many ways, if you're Arturis Karnaschova, sealing your own fate. Because at the end of the season, if you fall out of the playoffs with a group that you have kept together, I don't know how you can package that as progress. So in the name of progress, I think they will try to make a deal. And then they can at least declare what direction they want to head. I think the most likely guy to be traded is Vuč. Nikola Vucevic has got the most tradable contract. It's the simplest fit probably for teams that are seeking a offensive-minded big man. A guy that will not get in the way offensively and very content maybe being the third option. Very dangerous still being the third option. And I believe there's a report in The Athletic earlier this week that he thought that I don't know, it did not quote him, but it speculated that he saw the Golden State Warriors as a desirable option or an alternative if they were to trade him. I don't know what the haul would be in return. I'm not sure if it matters. But I think Vuč would be the most likely guy to go. I don't think they're going to make another trade. The over-under would be 2, and I would take the under.
I'd set the line at 1.5 just so we can have winners and losers. No pushes, David. Nobody wants to just have – we want winners,
see,
no, losers.
I know.
No,
I should
have
said 1.5.
And I think it should be over 1.5. I think it will be under 1.5. I think the Vuč is the one who is on his way out. Zach should be right behind him, but I don't see that happening.
You know, I mean, they really should. The over-under should be set at 2.5, because we believe that there's a possibility of 3 moves. But I don't think that's happening either. I think that, you know, if they make a single move, I'll be impressed. That's how I feel about the way they've gone about business. It's just there have been a lot of rumors, and there's been a lot of talk, a lot of teams mentioned, and very little action. And so the idea that, you know, you gave up a bunch of players and picks for Vuč and now you're going to try to move them for anything, they're struggling with that. They've just been struggling, and they've been demanding a first round pick, and their number hadn't gone down. You know, their demands haven't gone down, not yet anyway, but they're talking about things. But, you know, it is the idea of kind of overpaying to retain guys. That's basically what they've been doing. You know, I mean, they gave Zach a lot of money. Vuč got retained. What did they do with Patrick Williams? Too much money. I mean, they have just decided to keep bringing people back.
I understand what you're saying. I don't totally disagree. I do think the only way I would push back a little bit that the Patrick Williams looks like a harder investment to understand than Vooch. Vooch is a productive guy. They got pretty affordable by NBA standards. 3 years, $60 million for a guy that it's a double-double machine. That's not bad, right? I mean, that's what makes his contract tradable, more tradable than Patrick Williams.
You know, I'll go back to this. You know, Zach has 2 years at $95 million left. I believe even like Vooch has a year left at $21.5 million. So, you know, Lonzo Ball, God love him, has got 1 year left at $21.7 million. Those guys all should be moved.
Do you think they can move Lonzo Ball?
I don't. I don't think they can. I don't think they can move anyone.
You can find someone who's going to give up anything.
I think they can give Vooch away, and they might be able to include Zach in a deal if they're willing to give it away. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're getting anything. I think Patrick Williams is the hardest contract to move.
I agree with that because there's 4 years left, and you don't know what he's going to be. It's a gamble. And Lonzo Ball is a risk as well. And I wonder if you're the Bulls and you want to move him. And I think this is interesting to me. You have a few games left before the deadline. Do you play him more to get people an idea of what he can be, or do you play him less because you're afraid he might injure himself in a deal?
Right there is the reason you can't trade people.
That's the conundrum.
But I would say that they'll make a trade. They have to make a trade. It will not be a favorable one.
And it won't be one really to celebrate.
No.
Because what it will be is trading for the sake of trading, change for the sake of change.
They'll be trading to get their own, to maintain their own 10th overall pick.
Yeah.
Right?
Which nobody should celebrate,
no,
really.
No. That's what they'll end up
doing. Not in Chicago.
No, you would hope not. All right. That is that. I mean, I wish I had happier news on it or I felt better about it, but I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Go Bears!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I liked our questions this morning, a lot of different topics. I like talking about the possibility of change for the Bulls, the idea that they could do something, but I think they're never going to get back what they give up. That's the sad reality, whether it's Vooch or Zach. They would never get back any kind of equal to what they actually have that they're giving away.
But if you hit reset on your thought process and you look at this trade deadline in that way, you're reminded that the main reason we're talking about them doing anything is because they want to take a step backward.
Well, because they have expiring contracts.
It's intentional.
Yeah.
And they have deals. Well,
how old is Vooch? I mean, he doesn't fit.
You're not adding, you're subtracting if you go that route because you are trying to position yourself to protect a draft pick.
Yes.
And to be part of this draft, which is deep. It's reportedly deep. We'll wait and see. Still seems like a lot of prospect hugging to me.
It is.
But there's a lot of that in pro sports. But let's face it, you're not unloading as much for the contractual realities that exist, but you're unloading because
you want to retain the draft pick and build for the future.
This is building for the future.
Yeah. Does it make it more understandable why he has a job if it is about rebuilding? If you are, do you trust him to be the guy putting the team together moving forward?
I think that if you trust him now, it's because you trusted him when you hired him. I don't think that he's earned the trust of the fan base because of the type of deals that he's made, the types of deals that he's made. And I said type intentionally because I'm not sure it is plural when you took a look at good deals. There aren't a lot of good deals to reference or to choose from. You know, big trades, big signings. The Bulls have been an organization that largely has stood pat during his tenure. You look at Josh Giddey for Alex Caruso, and your expression,
it's a bad deal.
Your immediate reaction is what most people feel like when that's referenced. When you look at his pros and cons, you'd like to find after nearly 5 years on the job, more pros. That's not being critical or or mean-spirited. It's just being honest and objective, because you would like to have more examples to point to when you say, all right, I trust him to pull off this trade because he did this one well, this one's working out, and that one's going in the right direction.
The only positive for him, honestly, is that you think of the team that never was. You think of the team that the team he put together, which included Lonzo Ball, and we saw whatever it was, 37 games of that, 35 games, whatever it was, 37, I think. But that's it. It was what should have been, could have been, would have been, would have, could have, should have team.
You don't get credit for good concepts. It's in professional sports. You get credit for results. Yeah, and
you're only judged on results.
Trades that don't work out because of injury reasons, it's unfortunate and unfair, perhaps, but it doesn't make it acceptable.
No.
Because you have to now, that this long after that development, you would have thought the Bulls would have pivoted differently or more quickly. They waited and waited and waited. And to some degree, it is understandable why they did some of those things and made some of those decisions. But I just believe that now they're – you talk about a sense of urgency. I know we earlier in the week had fun ranking the teams as far as the proximity to the playoffs and ranking the general managers in terms of the pressure on them. There's nobody in town in the next week that has more pressure from a sports executive perspective on him than AK.
Yeah.
That he's got it. He's got to do something.
I agree.
He's got to make a move that changes your roster and affects your future.
But I mean, like what you're saying is you got to get rid of one of the two star players on the team, right? Maybe there's three if you think Kobe's taking a step forward. But you got two legitimate former All-Stars on the team, and one of them has to go, at least one of them.
You've got to change the complexion of your roster. Yeah. And if you don't, then you have to explain why you chose not to.
And you're not going to win that trade. You gotta get it in your mind that you're gonna lose the
trade.
Well,
is it naive to say that winning the trade is less important than making a move at all? Because I think that's the way I feel.
Well, I feel the same way. I don't think he does. I mean, from everything we're hearing, he has not changed his asking price at all.
He has not, and I think that's the one thing you wonder about: the stubbornness, if you want to call it that, or maybe he's holding his ground, and we're going to look at this as a good move because he got the better of a deal that you didn't expect. I'm not sure. I just know a week from right now, we'll be coming in next Friday morning, able to evaluate, number one, if it was a good or bad deal. I guess, and I'm back up, number one, if they made a deal. Number two, was it something that they got commensurate return? And number three, what direction does that say now the Bulls are headed? Because those are the three things we don't know yet, and we'll speculate until Thursday. But next Friday morning, we'll have an idea.
Boy, I mean, I shudder to think how that show's going to go. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how I feel now, and I got a feeling it's going to be fairly a negative feeling. That's how I feel. All right, we've got Bigs Time is next. We're going to bring in our guy. We'll find out what's going on down at the Senior Bowl. We'll find out what's going on with filling the vacancies on the coaching staff, and we'll find out what Brad thought of what he heard from the new coordinators and the old coordinator. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Oh, boy.